Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 473 of the podcast with my boy of summer, Matt Walsh. Who doesn't love a Matt Walsh? I do. He's wonderful. He's been a longtime buddy. And of course, you might know him from shows like Veep or being a founder of the Upright Citizens Brigade. I know you're going to enjoy this episode. He's the best. And I hope everyone is having a good and safe summer.
I'm good. How are you?
I haven't seen you in so long.
It's
true. I mean, I haven't seen you pre-pandemic. I haven't seen you so long. And now it feels like 80 years have passed because the last two have gone on forever.
Are you in the forest or is that a fake forest?
I'm in the middle of a forest. I find that the sound is best in a wide open space, but with trees, birds, occasionally a deer.
You moved to Vermont during the pandemic, right?
Wait, so many. Are you saying that because so many people moved to Vermont? Because a lot of people I know moved to Vermont.
Really?
Specifically Vermont. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know Vermont.
I'm not even kidding.
I was just saying I'm picking a wooded area.
Yeah. No, I have like three or four friends who don't know each other who all moved to Vermont during the pandemic.
Oh my God. I admire
like
them.
That. As if somehow that's the last, somehow that's a state that a bunch of people in California heard was like the best place to go to be outside of the insanity.
I heard a lot of Austin, and I just talked to a woman today who went to like Mexico, and I'm like, oh my God, that's so good. I wish I would have done that.
Did you guys escape anywhere at any part of it?
We got to, we were in Tulsa, we went to Mammoth, we went to Oregon. So yeah, and then I took my son to Chicago, and then we actually did a wedding. So we've been moving around a bit in the last 2.5 years. How about you?
Yeah. It took us a really long time to realize that we could do, I think, and maybe you can relate to this, but it doesn't sound like you can because you guys were actually making choices. But you also have kids, which I think makes the awareness of being stuck in your house a very different beast than not having them around, where time just sort of starts to blend together. But I got so used to traveling for work stuff that I forgot that I could make my own plan to go out of town. And my sweetie is very similar. And so we just sort of didn't leave. And then we only started to really feel stir crazy like a full year in. I'm not kidding. Like a full year in, I had spent, you know, 380 days in my own bed, maybe for the first time in my life since I was a child. And then at some point we were like, but could we just go get an Airbnb in Santa Barbara? Like, that's kind of a thing people are doing, isn't it? And so we did it. And then right after that, things sort of opened back up again, even during Delta or whatever. So then all of a sudden, like the rest of the summer, fall and winter, I was gone all the time again. And then we had to cancel the festival because of Omicron. So it's been a weird, like the last 365 days have been very up and down in terms of that.
But you didn't go, you went for, mostly for work. Like you guys didn't relocate for like 2 weeks in
nothing
Santa Barbara
like that.
Or whatever. You just kind of little of that. Yeah. I admire people who were able to do that.
Well, I mean, again, not having kids, having dogs that you don't necessarily want to have to leave with someone else or take or, you know, whatever. I think that there was a lot of stuff that ended up sort of anchoring us. Then we ended up building a tiny house in the back because
that's
awesome. The other thing. You either move to Vermont or you build a house in the space that you, whatever remaining space you have in your yard, you put more building there.
And you guys
so that you
built
can have
it?
A little more room.
Literally? Or
I can't say we built
okay,
it. Or we definitely have a contractor who, yeah.
But it's a tiny, is it a wee house, a tiny house?
It's pretty small. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have a shower. We had thought we would want to do like, oh, we'll save room and we can do like an outdoor shower. So that's sort of still pending. The rest of it is ready. But then it sort of occurred to me like, I mean, do I want an outside shower? Because I feel like this is mosquito country now. I feel like that's really not to blame the victim, but that is asking for it.
You're asking for West Nile?
You're begging for West Nile. Please don't tell me I'm going to start hearing about friends of ours who get West Nile, not on top of everything else. I really am not ready for that. I'm just not ready.
No, I don't wish West Nile on anyone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to Connecticut this weekend. That's West Nile country. That's like the epicenter of West Nile, I think.
And listen, you stand a pretty good chance of Lyme disease too, so don't worry.
I just got another booster too. I'm two boosters in. Does that help me for West Nile?
I don't know. Okay. I think it only helps you for COVID. I also got my second booster, and I was filled with like a not comfortable sense of being invincible in a way that makes zero sense. I was like, cup two boosters, bring everything, give me everything. Like, I don't care. Expose me to whatever. It's like, no, that's boosting you for COVID and COVID only. So why are you being so fearless? This is very stupid.
You went out and burned all your masks.
I did.
It's
and
over.
I burned my bras. I liberated. Felt like I had missed out. Yeah, I had missed out on that as well. What are you going to Connecticut for? What are you going to do?
I have a brother there. I'm going out for, I'm doing Colbert tomorrow, and then I'm going to go visit my brother Friday. I haven't seen him in a while, and he lives up in Connecticut, and there's like a cool movie theater there that my nephew works at. I'm going to go visit.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and my sister's. It's good. It's a little quick trip.
How many kids are in your family?
I'm one of seven, and then we have three kids, so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Those are the numbers. And I'm bringing my oldest with me to New York.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So you guys, and that's who you took to Chicago as well. So you guys are getting.
Well, we rotate. Time. We do like a trip. I try to bring a kid because, you know, like you, sometimes we get to go to cool places for work, or sometimes it's a wedding and we can't bring five of us. So we'll just bring one. So we try to rotate like between the three kids, like a trip that Chicago, New York, or wherever I'm going. Sometimes they get to come with me if it's work.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the rotation thing sounds too fair. I would recommend that you start pitting them against each other. And yeah, definitely make it something that's going to fuck them up for life, because there's no rhyme or reason to it.
I think the things they compete about are like food. Like whoever eats the last Honey Nut Cheerios, they freak out and they try to get up. They get up earlier so they can have the last bowl, or like if there's half a slice of cake left, they'll get up early so they can put it in their lunch the next morning. It's like, it's not healthy what we've raised. There is definite competition around.
Were you guys,
things.
Were you like that as one of seven?
I think it went the other way with me. I feel like for the food competition, it's just my two youngest. My oldest doesn't care about that stuff. But I think for like who gets the last piece of cake kind of stuff, you were just, it was always odds. Like literally it wouldn't be a competition. It would be a random drawing. Like literally if there was an extra slice of pizza, my dad or mom would say, pick a number from 1 to 10 kind of thing. So it was very equitable and random. So it never, around food, it never got fiercely competitive.
It would make me so happy if you said my parents would slice that slice of pizza into seven tiny strips. Time, and by the time you get to the bottom of the triangle, it's just like a hair's breadth.
And then we would live on that for 2 weeks.
And this was in the Chicago area?
This is in Chicago, yeah. Mm-hmm. Outside of Chicago once I turned like 11. But yeah, Chicago proper.
Mm-hmm. Where was it? North of Chicago? South Chicago?
So originally 103rd in Kedzie would be the south side of Chicago. And then we moved to the suburbs when I was like 11, and we were in Darien, Downers Grove, Westmont, southwest suburbs. And then when I graduated college, I went to Northern Illinois, and then I came downtown right by Wrigley Field. I moved into the city proper, and I lived there for another 8 years probably before I moved to New York.
Got it. My dad lived in like Evanston, Wilmette area. So
really,
mm-hmm.
Grew up.
Yeah, that's where he. That's lived? Where he grew up until part of high school, and then that's when his parents they all moved out to Phoenix, and that's when they became like an Arizona family, which is where I was born and raised in Tucson, not in Phoenix, but. But yeah, so he has, and he. He would talk to me about Chicago before I knew anyone else from Chicago. He loved to talk about how everybody called the wind in Chicago the hawk. Okay, you're nodding. That's a good thing, because I feel like I told 4 to 5 people that, And they were like, no one calls it that. they had no idea what I was talking about.
When the hawk comes blowing in, you better have a coat. Yeah, you better have a coat on. Yeah.
And it's, why is it called the hawk? Just because it's fierce like a hawk?
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know. It's a regional term, I guess. I don't have a good answer for that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I have heard that. And it's kind of, it's probably blue collar-y. I don't know why, but it's not like high society people called it the hawk.
Uh-huh.
I think the working class people called it the hawk coming in off the lake.
Yeah.
But I don't have a good answer. Maybe it goes back to the indigenous people. Wouldn't that be beautiful?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know,
though.
Could be. And okay, I'm wearing a Blackhawk shirt today, oddly enough.
Well, that is funny.
Which is,
I'm glad you pointed that out.
Which is still one of the remaining sports logos that hasn't been changed, because I think it's respectful, but we'll see how long it hangs on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's true. You're right. Like the Cleveland Indians thing was so cartoonish and
yeah.
Kind of, it was like a grotesque.
And the Braves are still there? Did they change?
I don't know.
I don't think they have.
There was a hubbub about it, but I don't remember actually hearing that something actually
changed. I'm self-conscious about my native
just
look.
Will you please leave it so open so I could see the hawk? So I feel like I was.
There's no hawk. It's a black hawk.
No, I know, but the word hawk. Just the word hawk.
Okay,
that's all.
Got it.
Because that's
got
all
it.
I can really see anyway. I can't see the image really. Okay, so you guys would have a tiny, slender slice of pizza off the last pizza slice. Great. I'm already changing history right now.
Is this show kind of like I'm going to walk through Matt Walsh's life? Like, what's happening here?
It's not that this is your life. It's just, but I do like to.
Or it goes anywhere? Go ahead.
It goes anywhere, but I like to touch on where you're a teenager. I do like to hear a little bit about people's adolescence.
Teenager. Okay.
Yeah. Because it is shown to me over the last 10 years that there's just something kind of, I like that it gives you a sense of who someone is without probing into their personal lives now. It's like a nice, we all have maybe a little perspective. We got a sense of humor about it. And we all sort of experience some version of adolescence as being like awkward and difficult and in some kind of way, you know, like it unifies us in some kind of way.
Okay. So ask your pointed questions about my teenage. Ask your pointed questions about my teenage years. I like it.
As a lost, lonely.
This is a deposition. Go ahead.
Isn't it true? No, but I am curious about just the kind of makeup of your high school. Like, do you feel like where you went to school as a teenager sort of shaped, you know, the friendships that you had and the way, because there, I talk to people who, you know, I've talked to people who are like, I was the only black kid from Chicago who was shuttled up to a kind of a gate magnet program for gifted kids, like up north of Chicago into like white territory. And then I've had white friends from Chicago who are like, honestly, like I was one of the few white kids at my school. And I always think that's interesting just because, you know, it does sort of inform how we see the world. Because when you're young, you just see it how you see it. You're not thinking about how somebody else is an army brat and that's their reality and it's normal to them, or, you know, somebody else was homeschooled. I feel like we understand, like, this is my family, this is what my life has been like. And it's only until college that it seems to me, for the most part, we start to kind of open up and go like, oh, wow, I could have come from someplace totally different and had a completely different experience.
Yeah. Well, we moved to the suburbs, which was sort of farmland when we landed there, and that was slowly turning into subdivisions of homes. So it was like truly farmland. There were barns there and like tons of fields and crops still happening, but slowly it all went away. So we were in that transitional period and we were like total city kids, so it was like kind of strange and very much country, and riding your bikes everywhere and creeks and like fish and stuff like that were sort of new to us. But it wasn't true country because it was all kind of fading with development. And I remember like going into like these developments and like, you know, dangerously jumping on new houses and playing with timbers and stuff, like we shouldn't have been there. And then I guess my junior high was I moved from one high school called Eisenhower to another school in the middle of the year called Cass, and these two schools were rivals. And I remember that being a seminal, terrifying moment, like getting on a bus And it was in the middle of the year. So it was like the first day in January, and it was the only new kid on the bus. And it was very challenging. And I happened to be wearing all red for some reason, which is so weird anyways, because I still kind of dress. I'll just pull whatever's in the drawer. But I had red jeans and a red shirt and then my winter coat.
Red jeans. Yeah. Let me take that in for a moment. I do remember colorful jeans. Yeah. Like I had some green jeans for sure.
Yeah. And so red was the color of my old school Eisenhower. So it's almost like I was fronting, like, I ain't gonna change. I'm Eisenhower strong. Yeah. And then people were starting to pick up on it once I got into school. And so that was like a whatever seminal moment I remember. And then going to a small junior high was wonderful. And then as far as like diverse makeup, yeah, it was mostly like white, middle class, I guess, lower middle class. It wasn't like fancy schmancy. It was kind of rural, like I was saying, it was changing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the kids I went to school with lived on a couple acres, and we lived on an acre for, or 2 acres for a while, but we kind of moved around the same area. And yeah. And then like high school was a big high school named Hinsdale South, of which I am now a Hall of Fame. I am in the Hinsdale South Hall of Fame.
Oh my God. I would have dressed up. I'm so sorry. This was, I am woefully underdressed in my Snoopy NASA t-shirt.
Not a first ballot. It took me a couple tries to get in, but I finally
Wait,
got
really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Who else is in that Hall of Fame?
My friend Frank was a first year inductee, and I was like, he was like a deviant, total troublemaker, but he's a brilliant, brilliant, sweet guy as well. Like a doctor who works with children, and he's very successful.
Doctors who work with children, whatever.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
Uh-huh.
So my first application, I think I went through my essay a little cursorily. I was probably a little confident, like, well, I mean, I'm on a TV show. Is this really necessary?
Uh-huh.
Probably.
I wish you'd just written that.
And then that year, no word, nothing.
I don't even know. Does my high school have a Hall of Fame? How did you find out about this? Like, I don't have a relationship to my high school where I would know to potentially be inducted into something.
I don't really either. Now I do a little bit, but they found me through Facebook, or some of my old friends from high school found me.
They found you and asked you to apply, and then they turned you down.
Yeah. They made me want it, and then they rejected
me.
But at my second application, I put more thought into all the questions and my essay, and it was all filled out correctly. And I think they realized I was ready to represent the school.
What kind of questions do they ask? Does being on the show you're on reflect? I mean, it sounds like they just ask the same questions I'm asking.
I think it's more like, who are the teachers you remember? What did they take with you? What were some of the lessons that you learned at Hinsdale South that you still use in your life today? You know, what was your experience at Hinsdale South? How did it prepare you for your career now? Like, it was kind of like in the world of those types of questions. And then, you know, go ahead, speak, you know, open-ended kind of questions in that vein.
And every sentence you started out as, well, as a famous movie star and television star.
Well, I actually don't think I was on Veep yet. So I wasn't really super well known. You know what I mean? And I was a working actor is what I would call myself. But I still think I phoned in the first application. Or maybe I was on Veep the second year and then I became more interesting to them.
That's all it was. No.
So they're star efforts.
Were you into theater then in high school?
Yeah, that was the other thing that kind of asked. It's like, in your career now, what classes prepared? Yeah.
Yeah.
For your career now. I only did one thing theatrically, which was the variety show where a bunch of my friends, we wrote sketches, made fun of teachers, did SNL parodies of Jeopardy and commercials. But we were the hit of the show, and it was truly like another seminal moment where I realized, like, oh, I love being recognized for being funny. I love being able to create material and then have it succeed in front of an audience. I even love rehearsing it and tweaking it for the next night and find, you know what I mean? Like, I really kind of enjoyed it. But after that, I kind of put it away again because I went to college for like eventually psychology, and I was still finding my way. But in high school, the one sort of theatrical experience I had was, I also think I didn't have the courage to fully commit, because I think I was an athlete, or not really a great athlete, but I was an athlete. I like sports, and I don't know that I felt like I fit in the theater world. So I probably didn't follow, like, you know, I didn't introspectively think about what do I really want to do, or I didn't know the kids in it. So I kind of stuck with my peers and, you know, pursued the things I liked. And I was not a great student, sort of a troublemaker, wise guy, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And then also kind of a good kid. Like, I wasn't terrible, but I was a bit of a vandal, you know, at night. We're, you know, probably drinking too early and running around, destroying a few things here and there.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hey, it's John Moe. Join me on Depresh Mode for conversations on how mental health shapes our life. This week, David Sedaris with stories of his late father that he's finally willing to tell.
I think there's a difference between, you know, a good person and a good character. Like, he was a good character, my boyfriend Hugh. And my father was another one of those people. He was a really good character, but he wasn't a good person.
Depression Mode with John Moe, wherever you get your podcasts.
Were you a kid who, like, I know that you guys moved around a fair bit. Where do you fall in your age, like in your ages with your siblings, where, like, were you coming into classes with teachers being like, oh, we got another Walsh, like, you're this person's brother? Like, was there a sense of sort of, I need to set myself apart, or I'm proud to be associated with and to sort of be assumed to be like my brothers and sisters?
I did like that. Like, when we were in Chicago, we all went to Catholic schools in Chicago, and it was a smaller community, and all the teachers knew my brothers and the Walshes. So I kind of liked that, because you kind of felt safe. Like, nobody would mess with you, at least, like, if there was a bully, not that there would be.
And then came from a family of thugs.
Yeah. Because I had older brothers, basically. I had older brothers who would look out for me. Nice. And then, but that was like working class neighborhood. It wasn't fancy at all. And then when we moved to the suburbs, a little nicer, my older brothers ended up going to a different high school than me, but I had one older brother closest to me who was ahead of me in school, and he was a good student and a very conscientious citizen. And I was not that. And I can think of a couple times, specifically one teacher, he's like, you're nothing like your brother. Like, he was very, very shaming me and disappointed. And, like, he was optimistic. He's like, oh, Walsh, I love it. You know? And then, like, right. Nope. And then he would tell my brother I was problematic, and my brother wasn't really, we weren't close at that time. So he would kind of tell my mom. So it was kind of like having a narc who was like a senior, junior when I was coming up. And so I think my brother was embarrassed of me a little bit.
That feels like it would just cause more of that behavior. That feels like a real sort of like, oh, you're going to narc on me. I'm just going to do that because, do you know what I mean? Like, that just doesn't seem like, having your brother rat on you does not seem like it's going to result in you being like, I better straighten up. Like, it just seems like it would invite more of like, fuck you, guy.
Yeah.
100%. Now I'm going to go spray paint something.
It's like, what are you narking on, mom? What's wrong with you? You're like, what are you, a cop? Uh-huh. Like, what's wrong with you? Be cool. Yeah. And I was also kind of a good kid, because, like, we were like raised Catholic. So I was like, we went to the church, and I was like president of the teen club at the church, and we went on retreats. So there was this other, like, sort of not a goody-goody, but just sort of a decent kid. I wasn't like totally problematic in every venue, but in classrooms I was disruptive, seeking laughter. 100%.
What sports did you play?
Football and gymnastics of all sports. Isn't that crazy?
Really?
Yeah. Again, because my buddies were in it, gymnastics freshman year, my friend Kevin was like, I think I'm going to do gymnastics. You want to do it? I'm like, okay. So I did gymnastics, and I got good at tumbling, or that was the one, because all the other stuff was like, you have to have crazy upper body strength. But I had a backflip and tumbling by the end of it. And
Dang.
And I did a little pommel horse and some parallel bars and vaulting. But vaulting, they eventually, like, I think I scared them, because, like, he looks like he's going to get hurt every time he does a vault. Because I would do these, like, handsprings.
He's trying it for the first time every time.
Every time. Is he like, is he going to get over on the handspring? And my back would just miss the back of the horse. And they're like, all right, that's good for today.
Oh, that's a joy. I would not have expected you to say gymnastics, that's for sure. And is that a thing where they expect you to be to keep a certain GPA to like play football and stuff?
Well, I don't know that it's a GPA, but if you're a problematic kid, the coach would talk to you. Like if you're not doing your homework, like you could be a C, you could get C's and they wouldn't kick you off the team in high school. But I was like a B student, I would say, you know.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah, yeah. And I did find like the teachers in my mind that allowed you to feel like an adult or asked you questions in a Socratic way and they weren't just like delivering it by rote. I probably had undiagnosed ADD too. There's like other reasons that I was probably disruptive, but
sure.
I got along swimmingly with them if it was like open discussion and philosophy and things like that. And then there were some teachers that were just too easy to have fun with that I...
Was the coach the kind of guy who would sort of be authoritarian about it, or was his approach to sort of put his arm around your shoulder and be like, ah, buddy, I hate to do this. We both know teachers are lame, but I've heard a couple things, or like, you know, or was he like, listen, as a father figure, I need to talk to you about this thing that you've got to get straighten up.
The coach in football, the ones I remember are like, they're sort of like uncles that are strict. Like one, the head coach of the football team, I don't know, it was kind of like, had the personality of Bill Belichick and also like only liked the players that were studs that were probably going to get a college ride. And then he just treated everyone else like shit. And then I had him, and then I had him as a teacher, and he taught math, which is a difficult subject, but he made no attempt to like engage you and pull you into what was happening when you were lost. It was just like, this is how you do it. Okay, I'm going to sit down. And then he would just sit down and do his thing. And it wasn't, he was like a terrible teacher. And honestly, I think a terrible coach, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And so, but there was another coach, Coach Kerwin, who was awesome. And he later became the regular coach. And he was like a young guy out of college. And he was sort of like big brother. And he was super strict. But you could have laughs with him. And you kind of didn't want to disappoint him. You had that kind of relationship with him. So
yeah,
I never had like problems with, you know, too many detentions or anything like that. I wasn't like super problematic.
I feel like, and this is again the psychoanalysis. I mean, listen, you studied psychology. I didn't. I absolutely had no goals or focus in college and only majored in theater because someone kept telling me I had to major in something. But all that being said, let me go ahead and deconstruct you.
Well, you have a show. Like, you do have a show where you analyze people's teen years, so you are qualified.
I mean, am I analyzing? I am analyzing right now. But I do feel like, don't you feel like everything you just sort of described does sort of carry over into you as an adult? Like, you're not a pushover. You are very wry. You know, you're very, you can be super snarky in the right context, but you're also like very friendly and very beloved and very easy to work with. And that's something that that's a reputation you've had for a really long time. People want to put you in their stuff. Do you know what I mean? But you're not a pushover. You're not like, oh, he's just the nicest guy. You'll never meet a nicer guy. Like everybody's like, oh, Walshy's great. He's the best. He's super funny and he's super nice. But there's you definitely still have an edge to you. And I think that is kind of an interesting balance to strike.
Well, I think when you say edge, it makes me think of, I definitely always felt like there was something else, like being in one of seven and being in like a nice suburb. And I always wanted to know, like, I was always fascinated by the other, like a kid, African-American kid moved into our neighborhood. I instantly wanted to meet him. Like, I want to be friends, you know, like, I'm like, that's different for no other reason than it's different. And I've always had that, like, curiosity about the other. I always feel like, why has it got to be like this? Mostly because I grew up inside of a place, you know, a home that was like, this is how you do it. Get to school. There's seven of you. Don't list. Just do it. This is how we do it. And so I was always like bucking up against it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also very loved. Like my mom is an amazing lady and my dad was great as well. But so I feel like I was always curious about the other and felt, you know, like every teenager was rejecting everything and thinking he knew everything. And of course didn't, but I at least had the inclination to reject things that were supposedly just, well, of course that's true. You know what I mean? And so to that end, I feel like some of the disruption that I had was based in that and a curiosity for something different. not just swallowing, you know, sort of, because it was a very, not in a scary way, but it was a very like homogenous sort of Republican mm-hmm. middle class county. DuPage County is a wonderful, educated place, but it was also sort of homogenous. And there, and then I think you talked a little bit about like diversity. Like for me, our diversity was like a fair amount of Asian population, fair amount of like Indian population, not a lot of like African-American kids in my high school. A few though, I was friends with a couple, this guy, Marlon, who really nice guy, who we found out he was gay after college. And it was like, what? Like, it was like, so he had a yeah. lot, he had a lot going on. He was like one of the only like African-American kids in a high school, but also like figuring out how to be gay in the 80s. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. That's a lot.
Yeah. So that's just sort of like the homogeneity of like where I was, but also like educated and kind and not hateful people that I grew up with.
Yeah. What was the dating rule situation with a Catholic family? Who took that seriously? No one took that seriously.
I mean, as far as like I had to date a Catholic person?
No, but I've had, but like there are folks who are like, I was not supposed to date. Like I simply was not supposed to date until, you know, after high school or whatever.
Were these boys or girls?
That's a good question. I guess I'm thinking of girls.
I feel like it's harder for girls inside like a traditional Catholic family to date. But my sisters dated, but I think they're more scrutinized. Like I remember my sister had a boyfriend come pick her up sophomore year and I was totally like intimidating him. I'm like, sit down, man. Like, what's your name? You know, just so you know, you better behave. That kind of attitude, you know? So I think it's a little different for women. And then I don't know that I brought too many dates home, but I also like went to dances and had girlfriends, you know, probably senior year or eighth grade, you know? So yeah, I don't know that it was discouraged to date. Probably there was one time I do remember. Good thing we're not recording this, right?
Good thing.
There was a faint, you know, like I always had jobs since I was like, in, you know, 7 years old, and we would keep half the money and give half to my dad to help pay for everything. So we were kind of like a farm economy. Everybody pitched in, and which I loved, actually. I do love it. And I had a job in high school where I was a cook at a Baker's Square, and I cut my finger and they gave me a finger condom where you just roll to keep the cut clean. And then it was in my mom was doing washing. It was in my jean pocket and she found it. She was so upset. And I was laughing. I'm like, it's a finger protector. What do you think it is, mom? And she wouldn't even say it. She wouldn't even say it. She's like, what? I'm like, I cut my finger at work and they gave me that to protect it and keep it clean. I'm like, I kept saying like, what did you think it was? She's like, okay.
So yeah, did anybody have the talk with you, or was that something that came out of like sex ed in school, or like just friends saying like?
Fortunately, I had a good eighth grade health teacher who I feel like gave us like the best like breakdown of sexuality and reproduction and gender and stuff, you know, at that time.
Yeah.
And back then we were taught, you know, boys were taught by him and the girls were taught by another teacher. So it was still kind of separate. Yeah. So I got a really good download from him. And he was a great guy. I think he's still around. This guy, Charlie Kern, he was a football coach, basketball coach. And he treated you, one of the first teachers to treat you like an adult, like to kind of equally like respect you. And I always enjoyed that, you know, getting that kind of respect at a young age. I felt like those are the teachers I really bonded with.
Oh, for sure. Especially if somebody's going to be doing that kind of thing, because, you know, that's a good balance to strike, to have authority and so that he's not acting like a kid. He's treating you guys as equals. I think that the information goes down a lot easier, especially when it's like sort of embarrassing, weird stuff like sex ed, to not feel like someone's like, nah.
Yeah.
Everybody turn around because I've got this thing for you that I need you to see.
Yeah.
That's good.
Less clinical, more personal, and more like he shared a little bit of his appropriate stories and stuff. So it was good. It was good.
Appropriate stories is the key.
Yeah.
You guys, I was banging this chick. And hopefully he kept it above board. God, I would hope he would keep it above board. And then, so you started doing improv. Did you start doing that in college or after college?
My senior year in college, I would drive into a place called Players Workshop, take a class on a Wednesday night, and then drive back another 2 hours back to campus. So.
And then when did you get into it where it was like more, taking up more of your time than like that single night a week?
So I had a split focus right out of college. I was working on a psych ward, taking a couple courses towards like a master's in psychology. And then at night I was living with my sketch group, and we were writing and filming things and doing shows and trying to catch breaks, a group called the Department of Works.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for like, you know, year and a half, 2 years. And in the middle of it, I took like a nice walkabout and I went to Europe again. I'd gone for my junior year in college. I went to Europe for a year cause I didn't know what I was doing. And a girl on my floor is like, you should go to Salzburg, Austria. Cause then you can go on a train and you can go to Italy and go to Paris, and every weekend you can travel. So I'm like, all right. And it costs the same as my tuition. So I somehow hoodwinked my parents into letting me go.
Uh-huh.
And it was great. And then my second trip, I just kind of backpacked around for like 3 or 4 months in Europe. And I sort of came back knowing like, oh, I have to do comedy. I have to pursue it at least. Like I was sort of straddling psychology and theater performing. And so I kind of had my moment where I came back from that, saved up some money and just put psychology away forever.
Yeah. Forever for now.
I like psychology. Like I like being you in an interview.
Yeah.
I prefer to not be vulnerable, but I do like listening to people's problems and seeing if there's an insight I can provide but I don't know that I have the tenacity to complete a degree to become a psychologist right now.
Yeah.
But never say never.
Again, right now.
Right now. I should have done it during the pandemic. What was I thinking?
That's what we all say. Everybody feels like anybody who didn't write their book during the pandemic feels. I was really busy during the pandemic. And also anybody, again, who's a parent, like there was a lot going on. That's, you know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you had unstructured time completely by yourself where you could have like dug deep into a totally different foray. But I was not in that space. I was like still working on stuff. It was a weird time, but I don't feel like I had any more spare time. I just had like everything was spent at home instead of elsewhere.
Well, I like you similarly, like when you explained like you and your sweetie realized at some point, oh my God, we can just go to Santa Barbara. I feel like I sort of travel out of response to work and I sort of keep my head down and I don't have that, like it takes me a while to have that vision to mm-hmm. see like, oh, I can creatively mix things up.
But do you feel like that was the project that I'm about to ask you to tell me about? Was that born out of, I mean, it's, you've made a thing and it's coming on the heels of a pandemic. Were you interested in, did that come up for you then?
It came up before the pandemic. I pitched my friend Brad Morris, just basically half an idea. Like what if there was like a soft apocalypse, meaning there's no Wi-Fi and there's no cell phone, but everything else is working.
Yeah.
You know, we still have groceries. We can still, maybe we can't use the credit cards, but we can have cash. Like, what would that be like? And then it evolved into seeing that story through a couple and moving forward from that.
Okay. So tell me more about it.
So it's basically a couple from Chicago. Dan was in the advertising game and then he kind of blew his big shot and he's been sort of licking his wounds in the garage for like a year and a half. Very, very pandemic wise. He started a hot sauce business and he's convinced himself he's kicking ass, but he's not really awake and he's a little delusional and he's spending a little too much time playing video games while the sauce is cooking with kids in Europe, et cetera, you know? And Janine, his wife, in the meantime, has sort of flourished. She became the breadwinner and she's in like real estate leasing and commercial real estate, but she's also a type A that it just completely consumed her. And she's on her phone 12 hours a day and she's always working and she's popping up at 3 a.m, writing emails under the covers. And so she went off the deep end with her sort of new version of herself. And at some point there's a character in the story who passes away. One of my only friends, the UPS guy. And we find out that he was very productive in his life because he put his phones down at night and on the weekend. So Dan begs his wife, please, can we just go away to nature? No phones, no screens, no nothing, and reconnect. So they decide to do that. And then because they're so addicted and they've never done anything like that, and they're around people who are like preppers and with different points of view, they are convinced by the end of the story that like drones are following them, that the grid has been hacked, and that we're going to be at war with China. So that's basically the story.
And where could people see it?
From their couch, anywhere. Get sit on your couch, go to On Demand, type in Unplugging. And it's Eva Longoria. I just want to plug
Please do.
You would love her if you ever met her. She's the best.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever met her. She's definitely someone that that I've never come across.
Wonderful person, talented, funny, in it to win it. It was like an indie movie, as you know.
Yeah.
So there's no trailers. So she's like moving light stands with us, sandbags. She's the best.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Jesse Thorne, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have a special announcement. I'm no longer embarrassed by my brother, and me. You know, for years, each new episode of this supposed advice show was a fresh insult, a depraved jumble of erection jokes, ghost humor, and frankly, this is for the best, very little actionable advice. But now, as they enter their twilight years, I'm as surprised as anyone to admit that it's gotten kind of good. Justin, Travis, and Griffin's witticisms are more refined, like a humor column in a fancy magazine. And they hardly ever say bazinga anymore. So, after you've completely finished listening to every single one of all of our other shows, why not join the McElroy Brothers every week for My Brother, and Me?
Okay, this, have you ever played MASH before? I'm showing you the pad like it should mean anything, but this is something that I think predominantly young women play and played. It stands for mansion, apartment, shack, or house. And basically what I'm created is an alternate universe, wish fulfillment sort of reality. So all you have to do is just come up with answers off the cuff and it will be sort of all positive. I should be asking you to imagine things that you like.
Can I ask you a question?
No. So for
example, I want one question.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Am I going to get a fully collated and comprehensive analysis of my personality when this is done? Like, will your assistant email me what you found?
I will say, it usually takes me about 6 months to fully process all the data.
Mm-hmm. I welcome it.
There's a lot of data.
Okay.
I'm going to have to send you a special ring. It's not an Aura ring, but it is a little bit like one, or a Fitbit. And I'll take two months to process all your vitals.
Okay.
And that has to incorporate into it. And then I'm going to send an astrologist over to do your chart.
Okay.
So it's a multi-layered process. This is really just step one.
I'm so glad I did this podcast.
It's going to be worth every penny.
I'll finally understand
that I'm charging
who I am.
You. Uh-huh.
Oh, you're charging me.
Oh yeah. I'm sorry. Didn't come through?
No, my two publicists that arranged this.
Oh.
My three publicists that arranged this never mentioned that.
Okay. Well, we can work out some of those details. I want to say the paperwork's already been signed, but I'll take a look.
Okay. Well, honestly, I want it, so I'll pay whatever. I want the analysis.
Okay. Wants it and will pay whatever. Okay. All right. So for this first category, I'm going to say three, based on kind of what you were just talking about, three places in the world that you would love to be able to have a sort of relaxing getaway. And we're gonna pretend like the travel is not an object. So we can sort of teleport you there. So you don't have to take that into consideration. It can be as far away as you want and you're still going to get there in, you know, a second. Three places you would love to have a getaway.
Hawaii, like tropical Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of rustic Canada, Montana, mountainy, mm-hmm. with a trout stream kind of vibe.
Oh, specific. Okay, trout stream. Great.
And probably like a deserty, like New Mexico vibe, but like with a really good golf course nearby.
Great. New Mexico, Golf. Great.
I like the red. I like the red sand in New Mexico.
Ugh, New Mexico's wonderful. Yeah. It's wonderful. Okay, next one. Let's do three movies that you can jump into and just hang out in that world. You're not reliving the plot. You're not a character in the movie. It's just sort of like, I used to love, you know, Goodfellas so much. I don't know if I'd pick that one, but that you want to just kind of be in there and hang out in that space. And it can be, you know, a grounded reality, or it can be like Hobbiton, whatever. That's not what they call it, I guess, in the movie.
I would say during the pandemic, me and my kids went through every Avenger movie. So I would say something around Iron Man or the Avengers.
Great.
I'm a sucker for the Iron Man character and in that world.
Great.
I haven't gone back to it lately, but I feel like Ordinary People was one of those movies I was fascinated by.
Yeah.
That sort of moody teenage love story, but heaviness and family, theatrical. Mary Tyler Moore, incredible.
Yeah. Sutherland. Psychiatrist or psychologist.
Judd
Hirsch.
Yeah.
All right.
So that kind of movie, that movie still works for me.
Great.
And well, I'll give you two answers. One is, I force my kids to watch the Dark Crystal universe.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's so bizarre.
Yes.
And then I also tend to love this comedy called With Nail and I.
Oh, yeah. With Nail and I. It's great.
Which I could watch, you know, forever and ever because the words and it's just, again, it's like a fascinating, wonderful world.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know how I'm adding a fourth category.
You pick
to this,
one.
But I guess
you pick one. You're the doctor.
Oh,
you're the doctor.
I'm going to pick The Dark Crystal only because I have the same feeling about it, which is seeing it when you're really young. It's so different than anything else that you were seeing, but you understood that it was the Jim Henson Company. So you sort of have this familiarity with it, but it ends up for me feeling like a fever dream. Like, am I remembering this right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and then you rewatch it and you're like, no, I was remembering it right. It's pretty weird.
And it's not even plot. It's like the aesthetic you're going into. Oh, and the other one, either of the Blade Runners, which is sort of in the Dark Crystal universe, but let's just stay with Dark Crystal.
Okay.
Because that's all mood and aesthetic, the Blade Runners. Yeah. It's just incredible.
Oh, so good. So good. Okay. Next category. Let's do three foods that you can have in this alternate reality at the snap of your fingers without any ramifications. So you can have as much sugar as you want. If it's, you know, in the form of a brownie, it could be also like a thing you had once somewhere far away that you've never been able to have again, but we're going to be able to, you know, sort of conjure it for you whenever you want it. It could be, you know, Chicago deep dish pizza that you can have, you could eat 50 of and not ever feel sick or whatever. Three foods that you would love to have. It's not the only thing you're eating, but you can have whatever you want.
Crab legs with melted butter.
Great.
Can I go delicious red wine? Does that count? Okay.
Yeah.
And honestly, like fresh baked sourdough with butter.
I mean, hell yeah.
Two of them are with butter. Interesting.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. Doc, what does that mean, Doc? Doc, what does that mean? Am I in trouble?
I'm not able
Please
to.
Please tell me.
I can't speak to this.
Am I going
to
be okay?
If in 6 months you're still alive, we will be able to have this conversation.
Theory. Set up better help meeting. Set up better help meeting.
And I also require you not to see or speak to any other form of therapist because that could muddy up the work.
Cancel better help appointment.
All right. Next one is, and these are always the hardest when I know and adore someone's significant other, but this is MASH. It does involve a sort of alternate universe, like of crushes or of fictitious characters. So three people that you would like to have maybe a little romance with, a little sexy time with in this alternate universe. It could be like a cartoon character, just, you know, somebody from history at whatever age or era you want. Three.
Well, I'll just go like seminal, you know, Elizabeth Shue and the Karate Kids.
Oh, hell yeah.
There was like a Kerry Russell crush, Felicity, for a while.
Sure.
And I mean, if it's fantasy, like, I mean, Robin Wright Penn is just like bonkers.
Yeah, great.
Gorgeous.
Great. Okay.
And Jessica Lange. I keep coming up with four.
The fourth. That's going to be very significant in my analysis.
All right.
The fourth. The unwilling to stick with three is
See, I'm a disruptive very, personality.
Very
I don't like
troubling.
To be, I don't like to be hemmed in.
Very, very, very troubling. Okay. Next category, let's do three alternate universe jobs. Let's give you the chance to sort of play with some other careers.
Shrink?
Yep.
Chef?
Yep.
And like, almost like stuntman, like just doing like physical stuff.
Great.
Like for film.
Great. Okay. Next category. Let's do three musicians that write an album for you. That's just sort of like somehow you don't have to be, you don't have to even talk to them about it. Somehow they're just going to have, and these living or dead bands, composers, whatever you want, that sort of have this ability to create this album. That's like, oh my God, this is the music I always want to listen to. Like whenever I'm in the car, like this is my life. This is me.
John Prine.
Yeah. Great.
You're giving judge. You shouldn't give it. Can I give you a note? You should be silent and not give me feedback on my choices, because now I'm going to unconsciously want to appease you. You're contaminating the data, Doc.
I'm contaminating it. I am contaminating.
You should just go interesting for everyone.
All right. I can do that. I can definitely do that. definitely do that.
The Beatles, cliche, I know.
Interesting.
Thank you. And you know, again, it's four, so I'll go
it is. Are you thinking, it feels also like you're thinking of, you think of each of the first two on their own, and then for some reason you think of two simultaneously. It's not even, doesn't even come out like you're thinking of one and then you slowly then think of the fourth. It's like one, two, three, four.
Well, I go one, two with gut. And then when I get to my third, I'm like, I don't want to be hemmed in. I don't want to sit on top of the first two. So I feel like I want to create a little space so people can't pigeonhole me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then I start to quit, you know, go back and forth. But it's between Tom Waits and Radiohead. So I will go with Radiohead.
Interesting.
Uh-oh. Interesting bad. Interesting good.
Oh no, I'm afraid I'm infusing emotion into the interestings now. This is very bad. I'm a little bit in crisis right now. I'm a little bit in crisis. Okay, next one, let's do three skills that you can improve upon if you have the existing skill, or that you could sort of wake up with tomorrow and you sort of downloaded it Matrix style.
Music, piano or guitar in a second. I can't do anything musically. I would kill for that.
Okay.
It's more of a trait, but maybe it works, Doc. Obsessiveness. I feel like I'm always happy with 80% excellence, and then I'll move on. And I meet people who, like, when they're cooking or if they're like fixing something, it's like 100%, and they lay the tools out, and they have it all perfect, and then they go into it.
Ugh, I'm not that person.
I'm not that person either. So. Is that a skill or a trait?
No, I think it absolutely is. It's, yeah, it's like attention to detail and the patience and, yeah, like wanting it to be perfect.
Not in a healthy way. I would call it like type A obsessiveness if I could characterize it.
Okay, I'll ask you not to do any diagnosing of traits. Type A is absolutely a bit of a diagnosis. So, okay,
I'll leave that to the professionals.
And then what is your third?
Can it be real or fantasy? Flying. I'd like to be able to fly.
Tell me.
I'd like to be able to fly.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Two interesting. That's the first time you said three interestings.
Okay. Oof. I'm gonna get a new pad.
Can I change my answer?
No. Flying. Interesting. Okay. And then final category. Let's do three. I'm testing you on this one a little bit, but three sort of general sports teams that you would love to be able to kind of go back in time and see play at least one game, or like a specific moment in the history of like some sort of sport moment that you're like, oh, it would have been really cool to see that happening in real time.
Well, they're simple, like the Bears, 85 Bears, like the Bulls, Jordan era.
Great.
And
I mean, interesting.
Yeah. Oh, great. Sorry. Oh, good. I got two great ones. I got to keep that going. So she likes the first two. So I need to pick something similar so I get approval.
Gymnastics. Something with gymnastics.
I don't want that, actually.
Your other passion. Gymnastics.
Gymnastics is not my passion.
Are you hearing something? Are you acting like I'm saying something? I'm not saying anything. I love gymnastics so much.
You like gymnastics. All right, gymnastics, gold medal, 19. I don't know. Like, so it's 1, 2. Wow. That's a good question. I guess to be a part of or to witness again or to be in the middle of sort of a sports moment or team, I would probably go, there was that 1980 Olympic team where they beat Russia.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long time ago, but that was pretty magical.
Yeah. Okay. Give me a number between 1 and 7.
7.
Okay. And while I quickly, there's a very scientific method that takes me to the answers. No, there is
just
a very scientific. Okay, Walsh, yes, you.
Because tests can be prejudiced and sometimes they don't test what they're supposed to be testing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not fair in some ways. Mm-hmm. When you say between 1 and 7, mm-hmm. isn't that technically 2 through 6? Because if you're sitting on top of 7, is that still between?
Wow.
Is that still between 1 and 7?
That's a great question.
Or just revisit it
no
in your surveys.
No one's ever asked me that before.
I'm just thinking the subjects in your
what
testing.
What a curious mind.
Is that good?
If you abide by your own proposed rule, which, I mean, you're not saying it's a rule, but you're asking a very, very smart question, would that change your answer? If you knew that what I had meant was 2 through 6, would you still be glad that you picked 7? Like, aha, 7, because I could have interpreted that differently.
I can't go back. Like, I'm going to stick with 7, but I guess I'm going to give you a note, which is like, maybe say 1 through 7.
Pick a number 1 through 7. Right?
Seven.
Is that
seven.
How I would say it?
As opposed to between.
Pick a number 1 through 7. It's a lot to digest.
Well, if you want to get better at your analysis, you should be open to feedback on my side of the chair. Because I am, you know, I'm trying to grow.
I'll tell you what. I'll make you a deal. I'm not going to analyze the first thing, but I'm going to think about letting you in. And I'm going to think about taking your note.
Okay.
That you asked me to do 2 things. You wanted me to take the note and you wanted me to think you wanted me to think about taking the note and you wanted me to think about the idea of you contributing and improving my work. And I'm going to do the second one and I'm not going to do the first one,
okay.
But I might come around to the first one.
All right.
Will you please, listen, we've established it already, but I'd love to have people just revisit Unplugged. Tell people where they can find you, follow you, anything else you want people to check out. And once again, I mean, I know you said you can get it anywhere from your couch, but can you?
Unplugging is a movie that's on video on VOD, and it's on Amazon, Hulu, iTunes, all your like purchase sites. Any, just sit on your couch and turn your TV on. I bet you'll find it. And then, the only other plug is I do a podcast with my buddy Tim Simons from Veep, and we watch every episode of Veep. It's another rewatch podcast, just what the world needs.
It kind of is, though, as a person who does one.
Oh, what's yours?
Mine's all Avatar: The Last Airbender and like Legend of Korra. It's through Nickelodeon, so
my daughter loves that show.
Oh, you should tell her to listen. It's very, it's safe for whoever. Yeah, it's like anywhere you get podcasts, but it's a rewatch show, but then, you know, we also have a ton, the other half of the episodes are special guests, how the martial arts were created, how the world was built, you know, the cast, all of that kind of stuff.
What is yours called?
It's called Braving the Elements.
Okay, so get your plugs in here, Janet. Do you have any other plugs you want to get out?
Again, my services, while expensive, are very worth it if you have the patience to wait 6 months.
I'm taking it. And then that Veep thing is called Second in Command, and it's probably anywhere you get podcasts. It's on Cast Media.
Okay.
But that's a fun one. Yeah. Oh, I got to write yours down for real, because my daughter actually is into the Airbender world. My other son moved on from it, but.
Okay. Moved on.
Is that bad
language? No such thing. My other son evolved past it.
Well, he's older.
I would say the majority of our listeners are in their 20s and 30s.
Hi, youngsters.
No. On the Braving the Elements podcast.
Oh, I thought this one.
No, this is predominantly people in their 80s and up.
Oh, my mom would love this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's that cute Janet. She's so sweet. Isn't she? Wouldn't she be a good daughter? Boy, oh boy. I bet she's a good kid to her mom.
All right. Stop. Well, I have these results. The fun is over. The laughter stopped immediately. Everything grew deadly quiet. And I do have these results. I hope you're happy with them. I want to first let you know that, you know, the name of the game is MASH. That stands for mansion, apartment, shack, or house. So that's already built in. You're going to end up with one of those. You did get the apartment. The apartment is in Hawaii.
Hey.
So that's pretty great. You don't need a sprawling mansion in Hawaii because you're going to be outside all the time enjoying the beautiful surroundings. So apartment in Hawaii, good work there. I want to say, you know, while you're there, I don't know like how many sort of places there are to go play music, but I encourage you to find some because you are a fantastic musician. I'll say you play both the piano and the guitar and have an aptitude in general for singing and making music on various instruments. So congrats on that. I don't know if the fact that you can jump into ordinary people whenever you want had some influence on the fact that you have had this alternate career as a shrink.
Ooh.
But if there's a relationship there, it's obviously a positive one because it's worked out for you. I want you to also be happy about the fact that you have the ability to visit the Jordan era of the Bulls.
Hey.
And just sit courtside, catch some of those fantastic moves. I've never sounded more like I don't know what basketball is.
It's moves.
So sad.
I think moves isn't specific, but it works. Where that team
get
has a
some
lot
of that
moves.
great jostling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just get some of that great bouncing.
Okay.
And stuff. Some of that banging. To hear the bang of the thing. There's a ring, and then there's a thing on the back, and sometimes you hit that back, and it makes
the
that
rim.
Banging sound.
Yeah.
Sure.
Backward.
You also have this fantastic, during your travels or really whenever, if you want to listen to music that just speaks to your soul and almost feels like it comes from your soul, rest assured that the late, great John Prine is still around and at it again with the music of your life. Fantastic. You are very busy doing all of that. That being said, you still have time to get real messy with your buttered crab legs and Carrie Russell. Carrie Russell, hot buttered crab legs, is also in your 100% guaranteed alternate universe MASH future.
Does Carrie like crab legs
hates
in this
them.
World?
Can't stand them.
So it's still not a perfect world.
Well, you can't have everything.
No.
I mean, you can, but it's not going to work out. No, she loves crab legs. Are you kidding me? She loves them. Can't get enough of them.
Oh, good. Good. Okay. This is an interesting life. And this is, what's the S for in MASH?
That would have been a shack if you could have gotten.
And that H is a?
Just a house.
Got it.
So.
Okay.
A mansion, apartment, a shack, or a house. Apartment, very respectable.
Okay.
Now, can I ask you, why do you need to know that? What kind of work are you going to do after this?
Well,
to that category.
I might find this test and do it for my kids or something, you know?
Okay. All right.
I like sort of these open-ended psychological tests or games. They're kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do need to be licensed to play this game.
Oh.
So I can send you, there are a few online courses you can take before you're ready. But I think it's worth it. Your kids are going to love it. It's going to be great.
There's even a velvet rope in academia. Ugh, I'm constantly being reminded I'm not cool enough. All right. Fair enough.
So that thus ends. The only other thing I would say is that because I only interviewed gentlemen during the summer, many years ago, Steve Agee coined it my Boys of Summer series.
Oh.
And I invite people to, off the cuff, see if they can remember any of Don Henley's Boys of Summer and try to depict it through some form of song. Whatever comes to mind.
Out on the road today, I saw a deadhead sticker in a Cadillac. They can never look back. Desperate day. How could I know? I can see you, your brown skin shining in the sun. You got your hair pulled back, wayfarers on, baby. I can see you, my love for you will still be strong after
the boys of summer have gone.
Yes.
Great. Oh, what a champ. Thank you so much, buddy.
This has been so fun. Thank you.
The show is produced by Julian Burrell and Christian Duenas.
And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.